Well, the second line is really the end of the last piece. We were saying, "Amar name Rachikin Sion, Mimakum Tuma Shol Afsid at Eretz Yisrael." So, the assumption is that, right, we said this earlier, that when it comes to Tuma and Eretz Yisrael, you have to mark it off, but you mark it off right where the Tuma begins, or like a millimeter before, so that you don't make the entirety of the land of Israel into a graveyard, right, a Tame. So that's how you would know that the trees that are lined up are in fact the border, and it doesn't extend before the trees. Okay, so now we're on a related idea. We're four lines from the top of Amud Aleph. It was a statement that was made about if you don't know a field was plowed up. Right, we said that if a graveyard is plowed, two different ways that a Beit HaPras is a Beit HaPras. Either there's an intact grave somewhere in the field and you don't know where it is. That's one problem. Or it's a grave. There was a grave there. They didn't know where it was, so they plowed up the whole thing. Slightly different problem, because there you're only worried about a dusting of human remains that could be blown out of the way, and then you could walk through the field. We said you can't know for sure unless you have to treat it as the more harsh, unless you know, the more strict, unless you, Amar Rav Yehuda, Ache Sham Zakein O Talmud, Lefishena Kol Bekiyin Bedavar. Unless you have a Talmud Chacham, or a wise elderly person who can tell you the history of that field and the tumah that contained therein, because most people are not Bekiyin Bedavar. So we want to know exactly what that means. So very briefly, Amar Abaye, Shema Minat, Tzur B'Merabanan, Dika Mata, So he says an interesting idea that when it comes to Tzur B'Merabanan, when it comes to Talmidei Chachamim, rabbis that live in a city, all matters of the city are on their shoulders, or are of their concern. Right? It's not just the kashrut of a chicken. It's not just the operation of the shul and the Beit Medrash, but it's also where the bodies are. Right, where the tumah is, what are the circumstances surrounding that tumah, etc. That those types of things should be the Talmud Chacham's concern as well. Okay, we're at the two dots. I'm Rav Yehuda. Something else about Rav Yehuda, but this is also related to tumah. Matza Evan Mitsuyenet Tachteha Tame. If you find a stone that's covered in lime in such a way that it looks like a grave, so immediately under that stone is Tamei. Shtayim, let's say there are two stones, one apart from one another. Im yesh sid b'neihem, if there's lime in between them, b'neihem Tamei. V'im ein sid b'neihem, b'neihem Tahor. If it's sort of connected in some way, right, like plaster or something, then the entirety area between them also is Tamei, but if not, then no matter what, it's Tahor. So the Gemara asks, based on another Braita that they're aware of, V'yavol gav d'leka choresh, is this the case even if it was not plowed in between the area, right? Because we're going to assume that if it was not plowed, that the reason why it wasn't plowed is because there's a body there, right? The only time you would plow it is by accident. So maybe the only way it should be Tame in between the two stones is if it's not plowed. But if it's plowed, let's assume it's Tahor, because we have a bright of Tanya, Matza, Evan, Achat, Mitsuyenet, Tachtea, Tame. Right, you find a stone that's plastered, coated. Underneath it is Tame. Shtayim, if you have two stones, what did this bright say? Im yesh choresh b'neihem Tahor. If it is plowed in between, then we know that it's Tahor, that there's no remains there. V'im lav b'neihem Tamei, right? So this Raisa says the only time it's going to be Tamei in between, Tahor in between is if it's Choresh. If it's not Choresh, it's going to be Tamei, right? Because if it's not plowed, that means that there's a body there. So how do we understand this? So Rapapa Hacha Kishasid Shavuch Al Rasheim Umrud Alakan Alakan. Sort of different understandings. Basically, the idea is that there's sid, there's this plaster lime that was poured on top of the stone, and then there's some dripping beyond it in between the two stones. We're not exactly sure, right, is that dripping to indicate that there's remains in between, or was that some sort of mistake happenstance that doesn't prove that there's Tumah in between. Iika Choresh Minayam, right? So it's sort of the plaster evidence is inconclusive. So if you have Choresh Minayam Tahor, so if it's been plowed in between, we assume that it was plowed in between because there's no human remains there, and therefore it is Tahor. De'emor Machbar Choresh Hu De'ikpil. And you know why there's a little bit of plaster? Because when they brought in the plowing apparatus, it scraped up against the stones. And it sort of made a little bit of a mess in between the two stones. But really, that area is, in fact, Tahor. Pilo Sid De'beni Beni Hu Vitame. Right? If not, if it's not been plowed, then that little bit of Sid, that little bit of plaster, was meant to be there to indicate that there is, in fact, human remains, and therefore it's Tame. Okay. Two dots, right? Third of the way down. Amar Rav Asi, right? Meitzar Echad Mitsuyan Hu Tame. V'chol Asada Kula Tahora. Right? If you have a field, let's assume a regularly shaped field has four sides. If one border of a field is marked indicating Tuma, so that area is Tame, the rest of the field is Tahor. Shnayim Haim Tamei V'chol Asada Kula. If you have two sides marked, right? Let's say you have an L that's marked. So does that mean that the entire field is Tame? No, just the area that's marked is Tame. The rest of the field is Tahor. Excuse me. Three. What about three sides? Shlosha Haim Tameim V'chol Asada Kula Torah. Similarly, three sides that are marked as Tame, they're Tame, but the rest of the field inside is Tahor. Before Arba Hain Tahorin V'chol Asada Kula Tameya. Right? So when it comes to four, then what you say is that the marking is to indicate that the entirety of the field inside is in fact Tame. Damar Mar, Ein Marchik in Sion Rimakum Tuma Shal Asid at Eretz Yisrael. Right? So we know that the reason why this is so is you mark exactly the area that is Tame. You don't make assumptions about expanding that area beyond that which is marked. So, but once you have four sides that are marked, it's clear that you are marking it out as the area that is Tame. Okay. Different topic. We're going to become experts in Kilayim now. I don't know if we're going to become experts, but we'll see what we can do. Right, so we said that Yotzin Af Al Kilayim, that on Chol HaMoed, one of the public works that's allowed to be performed is that the representatives of Beit Din Sanhedrin are allowed to send out enforcement officers to check the Kilayim situation. Right, think about specifically Rosh Chol HaMoed Pesach. Pesach is a time when the harvest, when the fields have begun to sprout, and it's at that time that they, from the Mishnah, it seems to be that they can go and work, right? They're officers of the agents of the court. They're going to get paid for their work. We're not allowed to work on Chol HaMoed. We are allowed to do things that are Tzorech HaRabim, and this was listed in the list of those things that are public works, right? Enforcing Kilayim. How we do it, when we do it, so that's this next piece of Gemara. Bakilayim b'chol shomoyed nafkinan. Is it really chol moed when these agents, when these kilayim enforcement officers, CEOs, kilayim? No, but I think you spell kilayim with a K. Uraminu, we have a conflicting brisa. Be'echad ba'adar mashmiin al shkalim bakilayim, right? We had this Megillah. On the first of Adar, you announce the need to bring the half shekel, right? That's why we read Parshat Shkalim then, right? V'ala kilayim, and you also enforce kilayim. You also announce the need to be careful, right? Like a moda, you put up a big sign in Mea Sharim, right? Be careful about the kilayim and make sure to get ready to give your half shekel. But and what happens 2 weeks later? B'chamisha aser bo karen et ha-megillah b'chrachim. On the 15th of Adar, you read the Megillah in the villages, in the cities, V'yotzin l'kavitz et hadrachim. And you go, and we saw this before, you clear out the pathways, right, from all the thistles and the thorns. V'latakin archovot, you smooth out the streets, because people are going to be traveling for Pesach. You start your Pesach prep on the public sphere. V'lamun ha-mikvot, you make sure that the mikvahs are full. V'osin kol tzorchei rabim, you do all the things that are needed for the public. U'mitzaynin et ha-kvarot, and you mark the graves. V'yotzin al-kilayim, right, and you send out agents to enforce on kilayim. When is this? The 15th of Adar, which is conflicted by our Mishnah. So Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, both sought to resolve this seeming contradiction. Chad Amar Kan Bebechir Kan Baafil, the two harvests, right? The early harvest and the late harvest. The agents of the court would go out once on the 15th of Adar for the early harvest to avoid, to enforce on Kilayim, and then again 2 weeks later for the later harvest. V'chad amar kan bizrayim kan birakot. A similar idea. You would first go out on the 15th of Adar for the seeds, for the grain that would grow early, excuse me. And later on Chol HaMoed, you would come and enforce on... a little over a month later, right? We would enforce on the veggies, on the vegetables. So there's over the course of a month, it's almost two harvests or two sprouting seasons, and therefore they would go out twice. It's really the same answer, slightly different categories. Okay, Amar Vasi, Amar Yochanan. Lo shanu, ela she'ei nitzan nikar. Right? You wait until these dates that are given, whether it's the 15th of Adar and Chol HaMoed, right? They're two different harvests. So you wait until those dates if the sprouts are not recognizable yet. Avol nitzan nikar, but let's say, you know, you're walking around and you already see that things are sprouting. So then it's all dependent on the year. Yotzin aleihen, you go out, you go right away. Right? So, okay, so that's just a cat. It's these are the standard dates. But everything is dependent on the year and the rainfall and how fast things are growing, etc. So the Gemara asks, "My shana b'chol shel moed dinafkinon? Why do we send out agents on Chol HaMoed? Right? Why does it have to be Chol HaMoed? Why can't it be not Chol HaMoed?" So Rabbi Yaakov, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, mishum schar peula. It's a cost-saving measure to send out agents on Chol HaMoed. Demuzli gabon, because they can't get work. They can't get any other work. So the rate that they pay the agents, the kilayim agents on Chol HaMoed is cheap. They say the Beit Din is saving money, right? Or public funds, right? Beit Din would be funded publicly. So Amar Rav Zvid v'itamer Rav Misharshe Shma Mina. So Rav Zvid says from this we learn ki avinan lehu schar mitshumat halishka avinan lehu. When they were paid, these kilayim agents were paid with public funds, right? If you believed that this was a tax levied on farmers, anyone who grew things, right, that you had to pay the mashgiach, right? I can't help but think about, you know, kashrus when it comes to this, right? That if you felt that it was on the proprietor or the to pay, then what? My nafkal aminayu kol kamet debayelite in lehu, right? Then who cares how much it costs, right? Let it be incurred by the field owner, right? And that would pay for it. No, so it must be that it's being paid for by public funds, and we want to make it. We want to get a discount. We want to save public funds as much as possible. So we specifically do it on Chol HaMoed, since it's permissible because it's Tarchei Rabim. Okay, two lines from the bottom. Amar Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Ka'ota Sheshaninu. Oh, I'm sorry. Vad Kama. Right? Two lines from the Vad Kama. What is the what percentage of mixture is prohibited as kilayim? Right? One single grain mixed in is not kilayim. What is? We're talking about, you know, what at what degree of mixture are they enforcing Kilayim, and then we're going to see how do they enforce it. What do they do with Kilayim? So Amar of Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Ka'ota Sheshaninu Kolsa Sheyeshba. Next Amud Rova Zera Mimin Acher. Right. What's the rate of enforcement? A quarter kav mixed in per sa. Below that, it's negligible, and above that needs to be addressed as kilayim. And how do you address it? Top line, you might. You cut out some of the minority crop that's growing in, so that it's less than a kav. Quarter kav, excuse me. You might, is that true? Vatanya hitkinu sheyu mafkirin kol hasada kula. Right? There's a brisa that says that the punishment, the penalty for kalayim is that one's entire field, which is understood to really mean the entire crop, becomes hefker, ownerless, right? They lose out on the entire crop. Not the field itself, but the crop. That's a big penalty. It's much different than just taking out the revakav within the saw. So how do we understand this apparent contradiction? Lokashia kan kodem takana kan lachar takana. No, at one time it was that they would just remove the minority crop from among the majority crop. And then there was a takana made that they mafkir, they made ownerless the entire crop in the field. Why did that happen? Titania. Originally, these Kilayim enforcement agents would come and see Kilayim, and what all they would do was they would pull out the mixture and leave it and give it to the animals of the owner of the field, right? You can't have it, but you can get derive benefit from it. That's what it seems to be, right? The problem with that was it wasn't exactly a punishment for these farmers. Not only were they happy, they were doubly happy. Why? We've had that word before. They were weeding their fields. Thank you very much. I didn't want the other thing in there. Not only are you weeding my fields, and you just fed my cows. Yeah, it's a big win.
Tom Sawyer in the fence.
Yeah, seriously. So hitkidu sheyu okrin. So they said, okay, this is ridiculous. So the next stage was that they would uproot all of the kilayim and not give it to the animals, but throw it in the Rishus Haravim, right? Sort of make it hefker. They said, okay, it's not quite as good as it used to be, but it's still Simcha Gedola. Why? Because they weeded the field. So, you know, free labor. So it's kinah shem afkir and call sada kula. All right, fine. Let's incur a penalty that could serve as a deterrent. So if you're not careful with kilayim, and we come, we're gonna make the entire crop, hefker. Okay, so there was a stages in this takana. Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer. What was that?
In theory, they could let their animals graze there.
I guess there's a question about how exactly if Beit Din incurs creates the penalty of hefker, what do they do to ensure that you don't just go back and take, right? Because in theory, anyone could take from hefker, including the original owner. So I'm not remembering exactly how it works, but there has to be some sort of additional criteria that doesn't allow the person who was just owned it. To retake ownership right away. Maybe there has to be a lapse, maybe there has to be a time lapse or something. And even if you did that, it seems, well, I don't know where exactly they would mafker it. Was it on the field? Did they take all the produce and confiscate it and put it up for auction on 441? I don't know, whatever they did. But, right, it's a fair question. We have to understand what the protocols and procedures were when you were mafkir the crop of someone's field.
Continue to work the crop if it's.
Well, if it's in order to prepare for the next crop, right?
Is everything's still young?
It's young, but it must be usable. I'm not sure there'd be a time lapse. I think they would come when it sprouted, you know, sprouted wheat. It's like a thing now, right? It's Mizonos, I think, right?
Bread.
Yeah, it's expensive bread. So I think, so I think they would pull. I imagine they would pull it out right away.
Sprouted wheat is Mizonos.
I don't know. The sprouted wheat bread is like not real bread, right? Like Ezekiel bread is not hamotzi.
Because it's not baked.
Because it's not
baked.
No, it's baked, but it's not real. I don't know. Really? We're not doing brachos now, okay? But a lot of those breads are not hamotzi.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe they're made with juice.
Oh, I think it's because of the weird
wheat.
It's with the weird no, because it's not wheat. It's like I don't know what grains they use. Sprouted grain. Anyway, I'm not holding. But I think it sounds like they would pull it out. They would pull it out or make it hefker right away. And then he could start over again, you know, soon. Mishnah. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Moshchin et Hamayim be'ilal. Okay, we're kind of going back and forth into a lot of things. This is talking about irrigating, right? You're not allowed to irrigate normally, except if it's needed to prevent a loss. Chol Hamoed and Shemitah, some similarities, some differences. So here we're talking about irrigating from, you have a pool of water near one tree, you're allowed to channel that water to another tree. So long as actually ash gets called sada. So long as you don't channel it to water the entire field. So, call sada zrayim. No. What did I do? Zrayim shlo shatu lifnei amoed lo yashkim amoed. And if you have a field of grain that had not been watered before the holiday, you're not allowed to water it on the holiday, right? If it went a few days without water already, it can go another few days. It's clear that it doesn't need to be watered all the time. However, the two cases that Reb Elazar ben Yaakov forbids, namely one, diverting water from a puddle by a tree to the rest of the field, not just one tree, and watering a grain field that had not been watered for a few days, the Chachamim permit both of these. Okay, Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda, im hayta sada mitunenet mutar. Rav Yehuda says that if you have a moist field already, then you're allowed to. Then you're allowed to water it. This is even in the opinion of Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov said it's not allowed, but if it's under normal circumstances, but if the area is moist, right, so that shows that it's always had water, so you can continue to ensure that it has water even in Chol Hamoed. Time in Amiyachi, Keshamru Asr Lashkotu Mamoed, they said that it's prohibited to water the field in Chol Hamoed. Lo Amru, they didn't say it. El Bizraim Shlo Shatu Melifnei Hamoed. Only if we're talking about if it had not been watered before the Moed. El Bizraim Shashatu Melifnei Hamoed. But if you've been watering it every day, every 2 days, every 3 days, whatever the case is, Motelashko Tom Hamoed. To continue that order calendar, that system of watering, even on Chol Hamoed, would be permissible. Vimhaita Sadeh Metunenet. This is the part that we now see is supported by a brisa, that if the field had been moist prior, mutter, you're allowed to water it on Chol Hamoed. Vein mashkin sada gurid. You're not allowed to, but you're not allowed to water a dry field, right? If it's dry, it doesn't need water, so you don't need to water it on Chol Hamoed. V'chachamim atarim b'zeh b'zeh. And there too, in the brisa, the chachamim come along and are lenient and are permissive, even by a field that has been dry beforehand, as well as a field that had not been watered before the moed. In both these cases, of course, the chachamim would allow it to prevent a loss, right? Not to enhance the gain. But if let's say you had a field that you don't normally water, it's dry, and then you realize Chol Hamoed comes along, it's a long Chol Hamoed, and you realize it's really dry. It's going to adversely impact the crop. That's the machloket, Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, and the Chachamim. The Chachamim would allow you to water it, even if you hadn't done so before the Moed. Amar Avina, right, we're about halfway down the page. Amar Avina, Shmamina, Hai Tarbitza, a garden patch. Shari le Tarbutze b'chol Moed. from the position of the chachamim, we see like where it's moist and you can continue to water it. That even according to Elazar ben Yaakov, that also shows similarly that a garden patch you're allowed to sprinkle. Tarbitza. It reminds me of the word to spritz. I think there's a relationship from him. Does Rashi say spritz balaz? No.
I don't think
Rashi spoke yet. No, I don't think so. Tarbutza, you let us sprinkle a little water on it. Right. Sade garid my taima. Right? So we say similar to the sade garid, my taima. What's the case? Why by a dry field did the chachamim feel that you're allowed to water it on Chol HaMoed? To afla mashri lecharpa, right? That the irrigation would allow the late crop to turn into an early crop. It hastens its growth, which would be permissible, right? Interesting. Hachanami afla mashri lecharpa. So too here, as Rashi puts it, it's not for benefit, but it's delek apseda. Even though there's no loss, you're just sort of hastening the growth. So the chachamim were permissive. Once the chachamim were permissive, the Ravino says, and that's comparable to the case of the garden patch to sprinkle it, to spritz it on Chol HaMoed would be permissible. Two dots. Tana Rabbanan. Marbitin sada, sada lavan bishvias avalo b'moed. You're allowed to sprinkle a field with water, a grain field, on shmita, but not on Chol HaMoed. Vatanya, but we have a competing brisa. That seems to be a theme here, right? Lots of brises that contradict the first thoughts, and then it's resolved. Marbitin bein b'moed bein bishvias. That you're allowed to do the sprinkling, whether Chol HaMoed or Shmita. So Rav Huna, lo kasha. It's not a question. Har Elazar ben Yaakov, harabanan, right? Rav Elazar ben Yaakov is prohibitive on Chol HaMoed, right? And the rabbanan said, no, it's mutter. That's in consonance with the Mishnah that we had above. Tani idach, and another brisa that I think supports it. Marbitzin sadeh lavan erev shvius. You're allowed to sprinkle a field with water, a grain field, before Shemitah. Kadesh Yitzu Yerokah B'Shviyitz. You're not allowed to work the field on Shemitah, but to sprinkle it before Shemitah, you'd be allowed to. Perhaps even beyond, right? We talked about the time period before Shemitah when you're not allowed to really work the field, but you might be allowed to do this sort of light thing of sprinkling water on it until close to Shemitah so that the crop will grow on Shemitah. Not only that, you're even allowed to sprinkle water on the field during Shemitah, not for the crop that'll grow on Shemitah, but Kadesh Yitzu Yerokah the Motzei Shemitah, Shviyit. It's a fascinating idea. Sprinkling, yes, but Rashi says clearly, but watering, Yashkel, no. Right? So there are these, Shemitah is permissible. There's permission that even Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would agree to. He doesn't necessarily agree to when it comes to Chol HaMoed.
What's the difference between spritzing and watering? I mean, that's a fine line, so to speak.
I don't know. They don't water at Publix in the produce section.
Oh, but they spritz.
They spritz.
That's a pretty radical notion.
Yeah. Considering this was sort of in contrast, this is not the real sugya for Shemitah,
right.
But it's an interesting, this was just meant to show that there's permissions granted for Shemitah that are not granted across the board by Chol HaMoed. I mean, obviously, maybe one holds that Tarbitza is not a malacha. I mean, yeah, it is on Shabbos, but from a work perspective, not only is it not a tircha yaseira, but it's not a tircha at all.
Oh.
It's also from above versus from below, right? Think about Yashka.
It's like rain.
It's drip irrigation. This is Israel.
Right, but no. It's also, I understand that sort of, I mean, they didn't have hoses back then, but it's the equivalent. Where's the work? The work is when you are, it's the digging.
Right.
Tarbitza has no digging, that for sure. So how we're going to try to understand it, I think that's the starting point for understanding the difference. Okay, one more Mishnah. Tzarech et tzadin, excuse me, you can hunt the Ishut, the Ishot, and the Achbarim, Mistea Ilan, Umistea Lavan, Kedarko b'moed. You're allowed to hunt some of these pests. Ishut, we'll see, are moles. Achbarim are mice from a grain field, and from an orchard and from a grain field, in the normal way, on Chol HaMoed, Uvishviyat, and on Shemitah. Right? In other words, these are things that, to avoid damage, right? I mean, these are pests. They're going to damage if you don't take care of it. Chachamim are not so sure. Chachamim omer mistea ilan kedarko. Orchards, they're really bad for. You can hunt them in the normal way. You can trap them, get rid of them. Mistea lavan, shelo kedarko. When it comes to grain field, they're bad, but they're not so bad. So you can do it, but you have to do it with a shinoi, right? Umakrin et hapirtza b'moed, and you can fix a breach in a fence or a wall around a field on Chol HaMoed. You can fix something that's broken. Uveshviat bona kedarko on Shemitah, there's no iser malacha in general. There's just an iser malacha agriculturally. So you can build a wall on during Shemitah. That's not a problem. Whereas on Chol HaMoed, you can just fix the wall if you need to. Gemara. My Ishut, what's the Ishut? On Rav Yehuda Bray, Bar Yashen Lainayim. Rav Yehuda says it's a creature that doesn't have eyes. Moles have eyes, but their eyes are like covered by flaps of skin, so that's why many people understand it to be a mole. Amrava Bar Yishmael, Vitem Rav Yemar, Bar Shalmia, Maikra, it's based, you see in the Pasuk, Kemo Shabalul, Tamas, Yahalech, Nafal, Ishat, Bal Chazu Shemesh. Tilim 58, like the snail that melts and slithers away, the falling of a ishat, a mole that never saw the sun. Okay. Tan Rabbanan. Tan Rabbanan. Sadin et ha'ishut et ha'achbar misteal avon, umisteal ilan kedarko. Right, that was the first opinion. You're allowed to hunt, get rid of these moles and the mice from both an orchard and a grain field in their normal way. Umachrivin chore namalim. And you're allowed to destroy ant holes, ant colonies. Because I guess those two are injurious to the field, damaging. Ketzad machrivin. How do you do so? So now we're going to become experts in Talmudic fumigation. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, you know how you do it? Maybe afar michur zeh v'notein l'to chur zeh. You take an anthill with ants in it from one anthill, and you pour it into the other anthill, and it's gonna make a whole tumult, and it's gonna be a big problem, and they're gonna kill machrivin zeh v'mizeh. They're gonna kill each other.
Turn the world upside down.
Right? They're gonna. Right, they're going to smell this foreign dirt, and they're going to be like, "Where's this dirt coming from?" They're going to go nuts, and they're going to self destruct. Right, the only way this works is the ants in one hole can't recognize the new dirt that you're adding to it. So how far away does it have to come from? Vudekoy betray every denara. It has to come from the other side of a river, right? And not only that, vudeleka geshra, there can't be a bridge. If there's a bridge, the ants might have gone back and forth, you know, on a long holiday weekend. Vudeleka gamla, and there's no plank, there's no board that'll, right, because ants can't swim. Vudeleka matzra, and there's also no rope. There's no connection between the two sides. And how far away... if you're not talking about a river, but you want to just take the dirt from somewhere else and pour it into the ant hole, how far away does it have to be? Ad kama, ad parsa. Until parsa, that's the general area that ants will spazier around, right? But more than a parsa is already foreign, and that's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's recommendation. We'll have to ask our local fumigator if this, in fact, is a good way, a natural way, without using chemicals to do things. All right, Yashar Koach.